Okay, everybody, let's get this show started. Tonight's guest is Bob Thunder Thurman, and this is Jeff Overturf with WTFRadio.me.
WTFRadio.me, underground and over-the-top radio.
All right, everybody, this is Jeff Overturf from WTFRadio.me. I'm calling Bob Thunder Thurman from Kansas City. He was a professional kickboxer in the PKA and the WKA. He was one bad dude. Incredible middleweight. Hard puncher, good boxer, great competitor. Let's see what Bob's up to.
Hey, Jeff, what's up?
Is this Bob Thunder Thurman?
Yes, it is.
The Bob Thunder Thurman. What's up, big boy?
Not much, man. How you doing?
Doing pretty good. Well, I'm recording this right now for the show, WTFRadio.me. I just want to ask you a couple questions. How old were you, Bob, when you started actually doing martial arts, or should I say fighting in general? Didn't you start boxing before you did karate?
Actually, I started martial arts when I was 16. My dad, I was an honorary kid in high school. You know, I fought everyone in high school once or twice. And my dad took me to a martial arts system called Basidicon. And that was with guys like Steve Mackey and Mark Payne and Jeff Payne. And, man, those guys were tough guys. And my dad thought if he took me up there that, you know, those guys would beat some sense into me. Well, they did. And then I was in Basidicon for about a year. And then I wanted to kickbox. As soon as I saw kickboxing, that just looked like something I wanted to do. And I knew to do that, I had to improve my boxing skills, so then I started boxing in the Golden Glove Boxing Program back here in Kansas City. And I was doing that while I was doing Basidicon karate training, and it all worked out pretty well.
Well, how old were you? You said you were 16 when you started working out in karate first, right?
Right, yes.
Okay, let me ask you another question. The Basidicon, do y'all do katas and forms and self-defense and all that stuff on your belt exams? And
well, actually, in the Basidicon system, there's no test above green belt. It's all judged on your fighting ability.
Oh, really?
And there's really only one kata in Basidicon you got to learn. And the name of that kata, Mr. Jim Harrison named, is called Puki One Kata.
Right. So Jim Harrison, he was the instructor of Steve Mackey, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Well, did you ever train with Jim Harrison yourself, or?
A little bit. You know, Mr. Harrison, when I was coming up in Basidicon, you know, Steve was doing most all the instructing. And Mr. Harrison, he taught a class now and then, you know, and he would do his seminars and things like that at, dojo tournaments and things like that. So I had a little, you know, insight from him, but not much. I mean, I heard all the stories, all the great war stories.
I saw him in action.
Yeah.
I got to see him fight here at the U.S. Championships here in Dallas, and him and Roger Carpenter got after it, and it was one big fight. I'll tell you that they were killing each other.
I can imagine. I know Roger Carpenter very well too.
Do you really?
Yes, I do.
Those two of the baddest fighters in the United States were from up in Kansas.
Absolutely, man. Those two guys, I wouldn't want to meet either one of them in a dark alley, man.
I know that. We always had a lot of respect for you guys in Kansas. We always thought y'all were pretty badass.
Yeah, I can just tell you something funny about this past summer. Mr. Harrison now lives up in Missoula, Montana.
Right.
And he comes through Kansas City every summer and does a couple of his seminars, either street fight seminars or whatever. He was doing a seminar this summer called How to Street Fight a Mixed Martial Artist. You know, and I was pretty interested in that, so I was participating in the seminars. And Mr. Harrison, I told him, I go, you know, my biggest fear against a mixed martial artist obviously if he takes me down. I go, I can wrestle a little bit. I had a little wrestling experience in high school. But, you know, my judo skills and jiu-jitsu skills don't really exist. But I think I could keep someone from taking me down. And Mr. Harrison said, I bet you I can take you down. I said, no way. And, man, Mr. Harrison's 73 years old, and he put me down like I was a little kindergarten schoolboy.
Yeah, he is tough. You know, he was a guy, I saw him do a seminar here in Dallas on Alan Stein's birthday, his 60th birthday. I helped put that gig together, and I watched him do a deal. He goes, when you punch somebody, you go through their head, elbow deep. And, I mean, he just jumps through people's bodies with that fist going right through their head.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah, and so I said, you know what? I like the way he threw that. I thought he was pretty tough.
Yeah, he was. He's incredible, man. You know, he trained, like I said, he trained Steve Mackey, was, you know, one of his black belts, and he had several other black belts. You know, Jay Garrett, I mean, God, Mark Payne, Jeff Payne.
So Mark, you know, was Mark a black belt when you started?
Yes, he was, yes.
Okay, so you were a late starter then, because I can remember Payne fighting as a brown belt when I was a brown belt.
Yeah, I was. I started in the machine kind of, like I said, in 1976, 77, you know. And before I started getting anywhere, you know, it takes a couple of years there to get in the groove, you know, and start getting, you know, they were in kickboxing. Back then it was a big point tournaments, you know.
Well, did you ever?
The point tournaments from today to back then, they've changed a lot.
Well, no, they have. I mean, because anything was a point. It was like if it went into street fight, then that's a point. And knees, elbows, headbutts, takedowns, follow up on the ground, and no headgear, on concrete, no padding. So did you ever fight in point karate yourself?
Yeah. I never fought as a black belt in the point karate tournament. You know, I got the brown belt, and when I was a brown belt, I was fighting guys like Bob Biggs.
Oh, I know who that
Emilio
is.
Emilio Narvez and the guys at ESPN and Joe Corley. You know, I was fighting these fights on ESPN, and I was wearing my brown belt. And Joe Corley came up to Steve, and he goes, man, Steve, man, you got to promote Bob.
You know, that happened to me, too. I had a fight, and they told me that it was Joe Corley also. And so I was on a Thursday, and Greek Demetrius Savannis comes up to me and said, Jeff, you're going up for your black belt. And I was a fourth-degree brown belt. So I had to jump 4 degrees to go to first black. And I said, well, when am I going up? He goes, Saturday. And I said, I have to learn 7 katas. I had known them before because I was kind of ready to go for my black belt before I went in the Navy. And so, but I hadn't been doing kata. I've been doing full contact kickboxing in the back, and I've been teaching karate in the front, and or assist teaching, I should say. And then, so I had to learn 7 katas and go up on from Thursday to Saturday.
That's a lot of katas.
Yeah, and I was sweating it, to say the least. And they beat the dog out of me. It was brutal.
Yeah, that was a lot of katas. I know when I got my I wasn't a brown belt very long. I was like a brown belt for like 6 months.
Oh, really?
In Machinicon, the story is there. You know, everyone thinks when you get your green belt, you're halfway there. No. When you get your brown belt, you're halfway there.
Right, that's true.
I got my black belt really quick, and I was actually Steve Mackey's first black belt he ever promoted.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
I was his first black belt, yeah.
I tell you what, let's take a little break here. We'll come right back. We'll be right back. This is Jeff Overturf for WTFRadio.me. And that's my assistant, Chewy Duck Dog. Okay, this song coming up is called Maz Blue.
50 things. Now all I gotta find is you. And if the nans don't help me, baby, you better forget about me too.
Okay, I'm back. This is Jeff Overturf for WTFRadio.me. I'm talking to Bob Thunder Thurman. Bob, we were talking just a second ago on a break and talking about our history in karate and our background. And what I was saying to Bob, everybody, I was saying that I like to interview people that have had a credible history and the people that train them are credible. Like myself, I came from Alan Steen, Skipper Mullins, Demetrius Evanis, Roy Kerbin, and just that whole crew of fighters. And I know Bob came from Jim Harrison, Steve Mackey, Jeff, and Mark Payne. And some of the other names that you were mentioning you were coming up with, they became good fighters also.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Absolutely. That was one thing about our dojo, you know. I mean, we had so many good guys to work with, you know. And, I mean, you can only be as good as the guys you're training with. You know, I mean, when you got to spar with Steve Mackey and Mark Payne, it's like, damn, you know, this is worse than the fight's going to be.
I had to fight Billy Jackson. I was his sparring partner. That was murder.
Yeah. Well, you know how I feel then. You know, I mean, you know, and then usually, you know, we always spar and have four or five guys to spar, you know, especially when I was training for a big fight. And I'd have two or three sparring partners. You know, Steve would jump in for a couple rounds and, you know, Ron Goddard would step in, and Steve Stowe would step in, and Mark Payne would step in. It's like I'm fighting for my life. And just training, you know.
Oh, I know. I can remember I took a pretty good beating one time. Kenny Wiseman came in with two topless dancers, and me and Jackson were moving around, and I didn't want to fight him that day because I was getting ready to fight Mark Payne up there in Kansas City. And when he walked in with those two girls, I could see Billy glance over to the side and see those two girls, and they were gorgeous. It became a world title fight. I mean, he just got his eyes just looked pierced through me, and I just said, oh, my God. And he started beating holes in me, and I survived. And I tried to crawl out of the ring. Greek dragged me back in the ring. It was murder. Well, you know, you're a little lucky. You're very lucky because Mark Payne, he was a great brown belt fighter. I saw him win the Jack Wong's tournament. I think twice, as a matter of fact. Bob Griffin went up there and fought, and they were in two different divisions. And I saw Mark win. He was a great fighter back then.
He was a tough dude, man. I mean, I still see all those guys every once in a while. Mark,
do you really?
Doing good. Oh yeah, Steve's doing good. You know, I think real close contact with Steve and Jeff and those guys. They're all doing good. Mark, you're right about Mark though. He just had a right hand that would just knock your block off.
Yeah, he did.
Man, he has a good sidekick, too. Awesome sidekick.
Well, here was the story when I fought Mark. That week of training, Greek, he always had to sing about his hair and his mustache and all that stuff. And when he came in the gym, it looks like Mo from the Three Stooges. It looks like somebody put a bowl in his head and cut his hair. And of course, my smart aleck mouth, I couldn't help myself. I said, hey, Greek, what size bowl do they use when they cut your hair? And I mean, everybody died laughing. And Greek said, Jeff, you spar today? I said, yeah, I'm sparring today. And I got in the ring, and I mean, he hit me with a front hand punch to the solar plexus, and it pulled a muscle in my back from bending over so fast. And it broke one of my ribs, and I went down, and I was crawling out of the bottom of the ring, and Greek goes, stop the clock. I said, Greek, I got to fight Payne Saturday. He goes, Jeff, you think I'd cheat you? You got 45 seconds to get even. And they gave me an 8 count and made me stand back up and finish fighting him. He beat me to death. And when I fought Mark Payne, I had a broke rib. And when I went in the ring to fight Mark, right off the bat, he hits me with a jump turn kick right on that rib. I don't remember if you remember watching that fight, but I was rolling on the ropes, and he was putting it on me that first round.
I don't remember that fight.
Well, you fought Bernard Clark that night.
Oh, did I? Okay.
Yeah.
I remember now. Yes, I didn't see that fight, but yeah, I remember fighting Bernard Clark. He was a tough guy too.
Well, he wasn't as tough as you were.
Well, you know, that
didn't go the distance. That was a knockout, wasn't it?
Yeah, I knocked him out, I think, the second or third round.
Yeah, I think it was the second round. It might have been the third, but I was thinking it was the second round. You were an intense puncher, and you were tough. I didn't think anybody could knock you out. I didn't think anybody could knock you down. I know you got mad at me about having that John Macayo video out there on the internet for a long time when you got hit by him with that spin kick. But I don't remember you ever really getting beat. Now, I never did see that fight between you and Johnny Ontario.
Yeah, well, you know, I fought Johnny twice. I fought him in 86 in Atlanta. And that fight was going really well, you know. I just got cut.
Oh, you did? You know, so they had to stop it?
I got cut. Stopped on cut. And then I fought him a couple years later over in Paris, and he drilled me with the right hand, dropped me. And, you know, he's a tough guy, man. That guy could fight.
No, he had great aim. I mean, he was intense when it comes to aim. I mean, you know, he didn't miss. Yeah. In other words, there was no wasted motion. But I always thought you could kill that guy. I thought you were just that much better than he was.
Yeah, well, I thought that too, you know, and you know, I mean, sometimes, you know, I don't know what happened. I give Johnny's all the credit, man. He fought a great fight. The fight in Atlanta was really a shame that, you know, I got cut so bad, but you know, things happen, and you know, it just is what it is.
No, that you're definitely right. When I lost to John Macayo in Dallas in Fort Worth at Will Rogers Coliseum, I was overconfident. I thought surely I could beat him because I saw him fight Alan Watson in Florida. And I thought, I can beat that guy. And
Don was a tough guy, man.
No, you know what? You underestimate him because you think his technique's a little bit sloppy. Hang on one second. I tell you what, everybody. Let's take a little break here. And me and Bob will be coming back and talk a little bit more. This is Jeff from WTFRadio.me. That's my little alarm by my dog.
People get ready. It's a train.
Everybody, this is Jeff Overturf. I'm talking to Bob Thunder Thurman from Kansas City. Bob, we were talking a little bit about the PKA and some of the fights we had and stuff. Tell everybody a little bit what your experience was in the PKA and what you felt about it.
Well, you know, I thought the Professional Karate Association was really a strong organization. I think Joe Corley, man, I think he worked his butt off, man, to make it happen. You know, I think he did a lot of great things for the sport. Yeah, I just think that when it was going on, I think, you know, the TV deal with ESPN was awesome. You know, I had a lot of fights on ESPN. I was lucky enough to get a couple network fights. You know, I had that big story in Sports Illustrated in 1983. But I just think, you know, I think if we would have had the internet and, you know, maybe pay-per-view TV back in the 80s, there's no telling what may have happened. With, you know, kickboxing and PK, I really don't think there's no telling what could have happened or where it could have went to.
I agree with you.
It could maybe be where the UFC is today.
I agree with that. You know, it was a little bit premature also. One of the things that I thought was a negative, because when you and I went into the professional kickboxing, you had to be a brown or a black belt first, at least a brown belt. And I know after we fought for a little while, they were throwing green belts up there. And people that had been working out for 6 or 8 months and were throwing them in the ring and using them as filler material and fight cards, and they were just real sloppy. And they didn't have real good technique, you know, not very good boxing skills and definitely not very good kicking skills, because the guys that would pack the house were the guys that had a lot of that great technique.
Mm-hmm.
you know, I mean, you know, nothing against John McKyle, but he wasn't a very pretty fighter. So some of the other fighters that were real pretty, like Don Wilson and and a little bit about Raymond. And so how did it happen? Who do you think won that fight between Raymond and Steve Mackey at Will Rogers Coliseum?
Yeah, man, that was, you know, I was there with Steve.
Right.
That fight. And, you know, I mean, that was, I mean, I think Steve won that fight, you know.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I'm in bed with Steve every time. I think, you know, he took the fight to Raymond. I think Raymond caught Steve with some good shots, but I know Steve caught him with some good shots, too. And you know, I mean, it was just, like you said, man, in the hands of the judges. And that's what, in all my fights, I tried to take that decision away from judges.
Oh, yeah.
That made life a lot easier.
Yes, it
did.
A
lot less complicated.
Well, with me, they used to get on to me, DK and Greek. They'd get mad at me because I'd always knock everybody out in the first round. And reason being was, is it wasn't like my plan. It was like as soon as I got hit and I heard the crowd react to it, then I'd stalk the guy and want to knock him out. And I just couldn't stop myself from doing that. So it was like, I think that hurt me, though, as far as a career goes, because I didn't develop confidence in other techniques because I knew I could hit somebody with my right hand and end the fight.
Knock them out.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Or make them not want to fight.
Yeah, and that's my thing in my fights, you know. I was really, I was a pretty skilled boxer, you know. But I could kick real well, too, and I always tried to mix it up.
Right.
You know, and use both my hands and my feet together. I was lucky, you know, when I was in the Golden Gloves boxing, I developed a relationship with a guy named Dave Kennedy, and Mr. Kennedy was a boxing purist.
Right.
And I don't know if you remember, I fought Steve Shepard in 1980.
Right.
And I fought him in an 8-round, you know, non-title fight, of course, in his hometown. And Ted Pryor, his best friend's a referee.
Well, yeah.
And me and Steve, we fought 8 rounds, and I lost a split decision in his hometown. And after that fight, Steve started being my promoter. I started having a lot of fights down in West Palm.
Did you really?
Steve, we never fought again. I'm not saying he never wanted to fight me again, but the fight never happened.
Well, I can understand why. Now, Steve was a good fighter.
Steve was a good guy. I really liked him and got a lot of respect for him.
Right.
And you know, really, when I got back from that Steve Shepard fight, Dave Kennedy, I took the tape, the videotape, that's before DVD, you know, we had videotapes back then. Took Dave the tape and asked him why I lost. And that's when Dave really joined the team, jumped on the bandwagon with Steve Mackey. And that's when it really made my skill level bump up a couple notches.
Well, I remember you fought a black guy, knocked him out with a spin kick coming off the rope. Now, who was that fight? You pushed him, he bounced off the rope, and bam, you hit him with a left-hand spin kick to the head, and that was it.
Tommy Richardson, I think.
Yes, that's who it was.
Yeah, the fight was in Kansas City.
Right. That was a good fight for you. I mean, because you were using hands and feet both, and you were being effective with both. And I always thought you were a better puncher than a kicker, but that fight, you knocked the guy out with a kick.
Yeah, and that one fight, too, I had in Montreal, Canada, who was on NBC, I fought that guy named Eddie McRae. I knocked him out with that left leg roundhouse kick.
Right.
I mean, that guy was out cold. JT tried to catch him when the guy was going down. He wasn't even trying to stop himself.
Now, I think that's the fight I'm thinking about. I think that might be the fight, yeah. Well, I tell you what, let's take another little break. We'll be right back here, everybody. This is Jeff Overturf with WTFRadio.me. I'm going to stop this interview before the dog barks again. I'll be right back with Bob here in just a second. Okay, this next recording artist is Valhalla, coming home from Saskatchewan, Canada.
I took one guitar, I packed one suitcase, I left one sad look on your face, left you alone in the middle of the night, watched your house slowly fade out of sight. I went down to L.A. where the boys like to play. My eyes suitcase left one sad look on your face.
All right, that's Valhalla. That song is called Coming Home. All right, this is Jeff Overturf with Bob Thurman. We're back. Bob, we were just talking on the break there a little bit about how lucky we were to be fighting guys and real gamey fighters and everything. And what'd you think about us guys here and all the guys we fought with and everything?
I thought, you know, back in that day, you know, in that 1980 to 1986 time frame, you know, I mean, man, there were some great fighters, and there were a lot of wannabes. But I mean, there was you, there was Ray McCallum, there was Demetrius Advantis, I mean, Steve Mackey, Johnny Terrio, Emilio Narvez, man, Alvin Proud. I mean, the list just goes on and on and on. Mark Payne and Jeff Payne, and I mean, I'm gonna leave a lot of guys out that I should be saying, but I mean, those guys were great fighters. I mean, you know, I think back to all the great boxing matches back in the day. You know, with you know, Muhammad Ali and Larry Holmes and Marvin Hagler and Sugar Ray Leonard and Wilfred Benitez, you know, and Tommy Hearns and those guys. Well, our guys fighting kickboxing back there were on the same level as those boxers were, you know.
Right.
Our sport just wasn't where it needed to be.
Well, you know, go ahead.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, one of the things that I had noticed that back in those days, amateur was point karate. And then when you fought in kickboxing, it was automatic you were a professional kickboxer. Yeah. And there was no chumps in kickboxing at that particular time. In other words, like nowadays when you see on MMA, you go to like a local MMA fight, you'll see two guys lie on the ground for it seems like 15 minutes and there's nothing going on.
Wow. It's disgusting, man.
And then when you see us back in our days when we fight, you'd see like Demetrius throw a jump turn kick to the head and knock the guy out, and you can see Raymond do some flashy stuff, and then you had the power of Billy Jackson, and then, of course, you were a bruiser. I thought you were one of the toughest skull guys I've ever seen. I said, man, I don't think I could hit him in the forehead and hurt him. I thought, that skull looks like it was an inch thick. I was going, man, Bob's got a hard head, man. I used to see guys hit you, and I said, man, how did he take that?
Yeah, that was one of the first things you learned at Bushido Kan Dojo was how to get beat up.
Right.
You know, I mean, Mr. Harrison had a real easy way of weeding guys out, you know. He'd sign you up, get your money, and then once he wanted to get you go, he'd stick the dogs on you, and they'd beat the shit out of you.
Right.
You know, and most everyone would leave. Well, I kept coming back, you know.
Right. Well, you know, a lot of people don't realize this, but even the point karate that we were fighting in back in those days, it was on concrete floors with no headgear. I saw Raymond throw a drop butt on a guy's head and bounce his head off the concrete. And he got a point because, you know, back then a point was if you could end a street fight. And,
exactly.
And I mean, go ahead.
I remember, you know, back when I was in the point fighting, all we wore was Joan Ree. You know, gear, the foot gear.
Right.
And the little gloves. I mean, you know, you blast someone, you know, they always just say no head contact. Well, come on. You know, what do they call it, no head contact? When you're sitting there and you're trying to blow the cobwebs out after someone drilled you with a reverse punch or something.
Right.
You know, I mean, man, those were great days.
Well, you know, a lot of people, I don't know if this ever happened to you, but everybody says, well, you know, point karate is not very tough. Now, kickboxing was more the real deal. And I tell everybody, I said, you might not believe this, but I never got really hurt that bad in kickboxing like I did in point karate. Because some of the guys that used to fight, they were guys that were becoming or already were kickboxers wearing the 4-ounce Junri gear.
Absolutely.
At least it was a 10-ounce glove when we were fighting kickboxing, but that gear.
Absolutely, man, you're right.
And those knuckles, and then plus we could throw knees, elbows, headbutts, takedowns, stomps. And a lot of people said, well, how'd y'all do all that? I said, well, we use control to a certain extent. And they said, what do you mean to a certain extent? And I said, well, if you didn't cut them and they didn't bleed, then you could go for it.
Yeah.
You know,
as long as there wasn't any blood, man, you were okay.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Well, let's talk a little bit about, you know, I know you go around the country and you do seminars and stuff, and you had an episode with your wife and everything. You want to tell everybody a little bit about that?
Yeah, that was a horrible thing that happened to me. It actually happened in 1989. God, it's a long time ago. It's, you know, 21 years ago. But, you know, one day I was working out of the Bushido Kan Dojo, It was a Sunday afternoon, and me and a group of guys were inside working out, and we hear this bang, bang come from the parking garage. And we didn't think much about it, and all of a sudden these people rushed in saying some woman had been shot in a robbery. We rushed outside to see what was going on. And we got out there, we didn't really know. I saw this woman on the sidewalk. And of course, there's a group of people around her, and she had been shot in the head. And we all ran up to her, and some other people were actually, tending to her. And they rolled her over, and I realized it was my wife who had been shot. Some guy actually, came up to her, took her money, took her jewelry. She put up zero resistance. She doesn't know anything about the martial arts other than me. And this guy just grabbed her, stuck a gun in her face, and shot her at point blank range.
Wow. And your wife lived through it, right?
Yeah, she made a full recovery. What happened, the police say there was a small caliber weapon she got shot with, and the bullet actually penetrated her scalp and actually ricocheted off her skull, not the top of her head. It left a scalp wound only.
Oh. That's a miracle.
It was long on the top of her head. Yeah, really, it really was a miracle. When she got shot, she was seven weeks pregnant, and that turned out okay. I've got a 21-year-old daughter now. So I mean, it absolutely was a miracle. When that happened, it really puts perspective, man. You get clarity in your life about things, and it makes you know what's real important to you. Not that I didn't know she wasn't important to me, but it makes you really realize what's really means something.
Right.
And I had a real good friend of mine at that time, still my friend. His name's Jim Rascott. He's an internationally known social psychologist. He's written several books on human behavior. He's one of the foremost authorities in the world on reading nonverbal communication. The guy's written several books. And he's also a former Minneapolis police officer.
Really?
He told me, he says, Bob, in life, man, a lot of things happen to people for different reasons. He goes, you need to turn this into something positive. He goes, you need to learn how to be a speaker and present safety programs to people who don't know anything about martial arts, who just want to be safe. So we developed a company called Counter-Tactics. And I've been doing programs now for a little over 21 years. We do anything from like a one-hour keynote on workplace violence, personal safety, all the way to a half-day, full-blown, street survival seminar.
Right.
And, we sell them, we sell them to, corporate America. We sell them to high school graduation, project graduation. We sell them to Parks and Recs. I mean, we've done it for about every kind of organization you can even imagine. I got involved with the TSA about 7 years ago. I was actually working with three airlines. One of them was called JetMax, another one called EOS, another one called Champion Air. And they were all not big carriers. They had like 500 to 700 flight personnel. And right after 9/11 hit, I was doing all their flight attendant and pilot self-defense training. Got for 4 or 5 years.
Wow.
In 2008, when the fuel prices went through the ceiling, all three of those airlines went out of business.
Right, right.
But I actually wrote the self-defense programs for them.
Really?
For the TSA, yeah.
What's that, TSA, what does that stand for again?
Transportation Safety Administration.
Oh, you mean the people that shoot you with the pictures now so they can see you nude now.
Yeah.
The one that put the gloves on and pat you down before you get on the plane.
Yeah. And, really, I mean, they got a big job and a lot of people to protect. And a lot of people, don't like it. But you know what they're trying? They're trying to stop terrorism. Let me tell you something. I learned a lot about terrorism when I was working with those airlines. A lot of their scary people. And, man, I'm telling you what, it's a scary thing. It's
really
a scary thing because there's people out there whose sole goal is to kill Americans.
Right.
And I tell them SOBs. I said, man, bring it on. You guys want a piece of it, man? Let's do it,
I had me and a friend of mine thought of something that might work. It says, welcome to Jihad Airlines. you leave and you take off, but you don't come back. You will get 75 virgins when your plane crashes. Welcome to Jihad Airlines.
Yeah, I swear. Every time I fly, every time I fly, I always take a seat in the middle of the airplane, on the aisle. So I'm telling you what, man, they're trying to hijack that damn plane I'm on. So I'm telling you, man, they may win the battle, but I'm gonna win a few wars, I guarantee it. There will be a couple of them that will go with me. I promise you that.
Well, you know, I've always admired you. You've been very headstrong. You're very focused. You're a great fighter. I always liked you outside the ring. You always had something positive to say. I think you and Don Wilson were two of the people that I like to talk to the most. And I think
you're... Don's a good guy, you know. They tried to get out. We were supposed to fight a couple different times, and both times we actually had about three or four different fights set. And one time he'd get hurt, one time I'd get hurt, one time he'd get hurt, one time I'd get hurt, and that fight never happened, you know.
Well, you know, it was funny. You mentioned Ted Pryor earlier. I fought Donnie here, yeah. One of a guy in Cocoa Beach, Florida, a place called Brassies, and then Raymond. He fought in the main event on that fight. He fought Ted Pryor. And, I mean, Raymond hit Ted Pryor with a jump back kick right in the bladder. I mean, the belly button and the bladder. Not the groin, but the bladder. And it just stopped the fight. I mean, it was over. And they let him recover, and they said, oh, it was a low blow. And it wasn't a low blow. He caught him right in the center of gravity, right in the stomach. And they must have stopped that fight for a full minute or 2 minutes to let him recover to keep fighting. But that was a knockout right there. And but they, you know, like I said, it's the hometown thing. I fought Donnie here. I had the fastest knockout of the year. It was 15 seconds. As soon as we clashed, I hit him with the right hand, and he went down, and he got back up. I hit him another right, end of fight.
Really?
Oh, wow. Yeah. That was 15 seconds. The fastest knockout that particular year. That was 1979, I think it was.
Yeah, I wish I would have got the chance to fight Don. You know, he would have been a good fight. I know, no doubt.
Oh, yeah. Well, it would have been the brawler against the technician.
Yeah, it would have been a cage, you know, and I fought good guys, good like that. The taller guys I always had success with, you know. I had good success with Alvin Prouder, with Emilio Narvez. He was a tough guy, man.
Right.
A tough guy, you know. And those guys were good for me. I was good. I was good going in. I just got hit sometimes. You know, I dropped my left hand.
Right.
And guys would come over that right hand and say, man.
Yeah, you don't want to drop that left.
No.
I had a few of them myself from John Macaio. Well, listen, we're going to wrap this interview up. Bob, I'm glad you came on my show. We're going to do another show again.
My pleasure.
And tell everybody about where they go to your website for your seminars.
Okay, yeah. If anyone knows anyone who's interested in doing one, you know, a dojo, a business, an organization, man, they go to my website. It's counterattactics.com. And that's spelled counterattactics.com. And, man, shoot an email. I'd love to talk to you about my program, and I'd love to come to this seminar, man. They're effective. You know, the seminars are really cool because, you know, it talks about the mental awareness part. It talks about the psychology of violence, man, why people do it, what motivates them. I mean, people actually learn to read through body language, you know, what someone wants or how threatening they really are. You know, you learn some verbal de-escalation skills, anger management skills, psychological strategies in case you're confronted with an armed assailant. You know, there's different things you can say or do.
Well, I know everybody got mad at me on that future martial arts, whatever that is. I was talking about the people on the boat over in Somalia, those four people that were on that yacht, and they went up through Somalia and left that group of boats, and they were talking about how terrible it was. And I said, you know, they learned the hardest lesson there is to learn. And they said, well, what's that? And I said, awareness. I said, weren't they aware that there are pirates off Somalia hijacking boats and killing people on a regular basis now for years? So what were they thinking when they went there?
Yeah, no kidding.
You know, so part of the deal about safety is being aware and not just assuming not assuming anything and always being, you know, alert if you can or of your surroundings, especially when it's in a place like a parking garage or like under the stands at a football stadium or, you know, somewhere, you know, in a street where there's not too many people out and you're by yourself. You know,
absolutely, man. Absolutely. awareness is a state of mind. You know, it's an example I give people. You know, I say, you know, how many people, you know, have been walking to their car and they're thinking about what just happened or where they're going, you know.
Right.
And they're so focused on their thinking, they walk right by the car.
Right.
You know, or I ask people, how many people have lost their car in a parking lot? You know, when you're looking around for it, you're totally oblivious to your surroundings. How many people spend half their life in that state of mind?
Right.
You know, and people got to learn to be aware of where they are so they can be prepared to react.
All right, Bob. Well, we're going to have you on the show again in the future because you and I can do a good show. You know, like I said, I always liked you when I used to see you. I think I saw you in St. Louis. I saw you in Kansas City. I saw you here in Dallas. And I may have even seen you once in Florida. I can't remember, but I think I did.
I think so. I think we were down in Florida hanging out a couple times.
Right.
Yeah, I know in Dallas for a fact. I know we were.
And maybe
yeah,
Oklahoma City, too.
I always liked you a lot, Jeff, and I really appreciate you giving the opportunity on your show. And, you know, I appreciate you bringing all the martial artists, man, from the past on because, man, they're some great guys.
Oh, yeah, they really are.
They got some great stories, you know, and – I mean, man, they're real stories. That's what's cool about them. You
right.
Know?
And you know what was so good was like we might want to kill each other in the ring, but once we got outside the ring, we were just nice and as cordial as we could be.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely.
Now, inside the ring, it was different.
no prisoners, man.
No. I know what you mean.
No prisoners, no. Absolutely. You know, when you, I mean, you know, it's a, you know, when you're in the ring, man, the fight's on, you know. When you're outside the ring, the fight's off.
That's right. All right, Bob, well, let's wrap it up here. And this is Jeff Overturf with Bob Thunder Thurman. You want to tell say goodbye to everybody? Or?
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, man, thanks. I appreciate everyone for listening. And, man, send me an email on my website, man. Love to hear from you. Thanks. Bye.
All right, bye-bye. All right, that was a great show with Bob Thunder Thurman. This is Jeff Overturf with WTFRadio.me.